Welcome back to the Injury Pros, where we break down the real stories and strategies behind personal injury law. I'm your host, Mike Sale of Cordisco & Sale, and today we're debating one of the most important decisions we make as attorneys. What factors determine whether we settle a case or take a case and fight it to trial? With me is trial attorney Stephen DeBonis, and we're going to give you an inside look on how these decisions get made. Okay, Stephen, so let's start with the basics. What does it mean to settle a case?
Settle is finito, done. We're out the door. Scheduled distribution is coming. There is no more bite at the apple. The release has been signed and you're done. Your case is done. The next chapter begins.
So if the person develops more pain in the future in that same body part, can they ever come back and get more money if they settle a case?
They can't. And that's why it's important to make sure that your attorney even quantifies for those future boardables and that anticipation of that future pain as well.
And is it important for the attorney to explain the ins and outs of a settlement?
That's one of the biggest things. Communication is always key, no matter at any point in time, but especially at the end. Many people think, okay, now what? And many times that now what is, we're done. I hope I never hear from you again because it means you're healthy and you're doing well and you're thriving. But many times it's a weird kind of ending because it just happens. Policies are tendered. There's limitations to ultimately what we can recover here.
What are some of the pros of settling a case?
I think you hit the nail on the head when you say it sometimes. Trial is not for the faint of heart. And that has many implications to it. You can begin by, you control your own destiny. When you settle a case, you are controlling your own destiny. You know the number. You're not allowing 12 or 7 sometimes individuals to choose and evaluate what they think your case is worth in whatever venue you end up. And ultimately, you're deciding that, hey, I got that money and now we're done. Versus trial where you might as well go to a casino sometimes and you put that number on the number or you put it on black, you put it on red and it spins around. It's a very good analogy that happens versus trial versus settlement. You don't really control much. The only thing that we can do as attorneys is do our damn best. And that's at all that we can do at trial is put our best foot forward and all the preparation and all the depositions and all the examination of evidence and our experts. That's the only thing we can guarantee. And that's something that we communicate regularly. I hear it when I walk by your office, Todd's office, Kevin's office, my office. Hey, we got this number. This is the amount we have. We can go to trial if you want to. These are the pros and cons of that, as I just touched on.
All right. So as in our firm and other firms, some cases settle in pre-litigation stage. Some cases settle in litigation stage. But overall, 97-98% of all cases settle. Why do you feel that is?
The attorney's doing their job correctly. They're quantifying the economic and non-economic damages. The risk isn't worth it for these insurance companies. There's many variables that go into that. It might be a minimum policy, which means it's only $15,000. If it's a larger policy, you sometimes see those cases more likely than not go into litigation because they're not just going to hand out money. You have to kind of earn your keep. You got to do the dance. You have to make sure that you're keeping everybody in check. Many times if a case is settling in pre-suit, it means that the injuries are severe. There's a lot of outstanding medical bills. The futures for medical or wage loss are exorbitant, or there just isn't coverage there. One of those two things is the big thing at the end of the day. And especially as you mentioned earlier, in a situation where somebody's still hurting and still treating, that might not be the appropriate time to settle. It might be in that litigation field. So you can kind of get the whole vibe of where we were, how we were doing before this incident took place, and now how we do today.
As attorneys, it's our ethical duty to notify our clients when there's a settlement offer, correct?
That is correct.
And at that point, do you generally have a meeting with the client? You bring them in or have a Zoom meeting with the client?
It's a beautiful thing, technology nowadays. It allows us to converse, communicate much quicker by phone call, Zoom, or they want to come in. There's a preference. It's different strokes for different folks. And at the end of the day, we want to make sure that we're able to pivot to whatever they want. That might be a phone call. That may be a Zoom. That may be in person.
So when the client comes in, what kind of things are you explaining to him or her about the number, about the settlement offer when they come in?
So on the outset, you want to know, I call it the Bermuda Triangle. I think this is something that you donned very early in my career when I came here. You're in a triangle with all personal injury cases is liability, injury, and coverage. Each of those are subsets, and you want to explore those accordingly too. But you want to converse this with the client. many clients see these billboards, they see these commercials, and they are misleading. We're going to call a spade because they're saying these exorbitant numbers, but they're not appropriately communicated. So in any given case, there's a policy, and that policy has a limit. It might be 15, 25, 50, 100. When you get into these commercials, you get 500, a million. And you have to communicate that with the client. The client doesn't know what policies are available or what monies are available. They can't make an educated decision. So that's the topper. And then we start talking about your injuries. Are you healed? And that's a very loaded question. How are you feeling today? Well, I feel good. But pause. Are you feeling great? Are you feeling better than you were before? Are you back to baseline? Have you hit your MMI, your medical maximum improvement? Where are we on this spectrum? And it's a longer conversation, and these meetings sometimes run long. And if we get to a point where we get through all of these, what I call benchmarks of explanation of, is there future care? What are the liens? Is the juice worth the squeeze? Then we get to something called a schedule distribution. We have a draft and we put it in front and we kind of talk about it. It talks about the settlement number, the proposed number. I'll take a round number of 100,000 here. It talks about our fees per the CFA that they sign up when they begin. We talk about the case cost. No insurance company is handing over a $100,000 bill. You have to show with through experts, narrative reports, why they should do that, why they are going to be exposed to $250,000, $500,000, and it's not worth them to hold on to that $100,000. And you communicate that with the client. Then you go through and you say, well, outstanding medical bills. Did you have insurance? Were there liens? Our firm does something that's really unique, and many firms out there don't do it. We give you your money free and clear of anybody coming and knocking on your door saying, you owe me money, you owe me more money. Guess what? You owe Peter, you owe Paul. We have entities that go in and they identify the liens, us as attorneys as well. Many times these insurance companies, the healthcare providers, are just lumping everything together and you're going to be on the foot for the bill. We go in and we make sure that A, it's a valid claim, B, it's a valid charge, and it's applicable to this. And then we reduce it and compromise it. We want to make sure that you're getting the maximum money. So we talk about that during the meeting too. And if we get through all those benchmarks, like I mentioned, and we get to the point where they say, I'm comfortable, then there's that ultimate net number that they receive. But it's not a phone conversation where it's like, hey, you just got X amount of money. I'll see you in 2 weeks. Boom, hang up the phone. It's not just the number. People see that number and they get excited. That number ultimately is subject to different things. And it makes it an easier conversation when it's a policy case. Here, we're very good at what we do in getting that policy. Policy means the entire amount. So when I was talking about the 15, 25, 50, 100, that means that the insurance company is saying, whoa, all right, Cardisco and Sale has given us a demand package. I've talked to the attorneys, I've talked to the paralegals, and it's not worth the squeeze here. I'm going to give you the whole amount for basically you to go away and leave us alone. And many times we're very successful in doing that. So you call the client and you say, hey, we have 100,000 policy was tendered. There's nothing more as attorneys we can do unless there's underinsured. But the next best thing and the next appropriate thing, if you're really zealously advocating for your client, is to compromise those bills and go back in and make sure that they're walking away. Because I tell this to clients religiously, this case isn't going to make or break our firm. It's going to make or break your future probably. This money that you're able to put away and save if you can't work and you get laid off and you don't have those Medicare or Social Security benefits or anything else that can help you kind of add to your income, you have a nest, you have a threshold that you can decide what to do. And for many clients, that's a breath of fresh air.
All right, so let me break that down a little bit. You keep referring to policies. For our guests that haven't, maybe not fully educated on the personal injury process, that means the insurance policy, right?
Yes.
That generally means the other person who hit you or caused the crash, if it's an auto accident case or so, that is their insurance, right?
That would be the tortfeasor. Yep, absolutely.
The tortfeasor is a legal word, but it's the other person's insurance. It's what's available, right? So when you get an offer from the other person's insurance, you have that number. You also sometimes have the policy limits from the other side, meaning the person who caused the crash. Tell us a little bit about what we know about policy limits from the other person when we're negotiating or before we file a lawsuit.
If it's pre-suit in Pennsylvania, they don't have to tell you. So there is a strategic game involved that I like to say that here we're playing chess while they're playing checkers. If we have such grave injuries, you have to know how to negotiate too. Because if you come out with a number, say $50,000 and the policy is 100, you just saved that insurance company $50,000. What's the better thing is we want the policy. And if they play this game of cat and mouse where they say, well, we don't want to tell you the policy, or our insurer doesn't want us to disclose it, because they, as insured, they have to go back to their person, the person who hurt you, and they have to say, hey, you know you're involved in a crash that you were responsible for. We represent you and we're paying the bill. Can we let them know how much money you ultimately have in your policy? This rubs some people the wrong way. Some people are like, sure, tell them, let them know, I don't care. Other people are like, no. Caveat to that is if you file a complaint, they have to tell you that information anyway. So it kind of makes you blow your mind a little bit. But notwithstanding, you have to play the game right. You have to be able to negotiate. You have to feel comfortable. You have to be quick on your feet. And you have to know your file, because these adjusters have hundreds and hundreds of files. They might send out a blurb, but there's also a weighing as well. You want to be nice to the adjuster.
I think it's a little strategy on the insurance company's part. I don't know that they actually call their person. They just say, it's our policy. It's our policy, I said, not to give the insurance policy information, the policy limits in the case, because it's better negotiation. If you don't know the policy limits, you don't know what you're negotiating for, technically. But in reality, in Pennsylvania, the state minimum is $15,000. It jumps up to maybe $25,000 on some policies, $50,000, maybe $100,000, $300,000, $500,000. But we're playing in those numbers. So what's the best strategies you use to kind of get that information out of the adjuster?
First, you always want to play nice. You get more flies with honey than you do vinegar. You don't want to be yelling at the adjuster, and you don't want to make an enemy, because ultimately they hold the purse. So there's camaraderie that exists there, but you also don't want to cut off your nose to spite your face. I am consistent with the language that I always use. I want the policy. If you're not going to tell me what the number is, I'm not going to bid against myself. And they ultimately know that we'll get that number in litigation too, and there's costs that they incur. So you also have to be mindful of that. An experienced litigator knows that there's costs affiliated on both sides. If I file this complaint, my client incurs costs from a narrative, from an expert doctor, the doctor they've been seeing, or maybe a specialty doctor. They're going to tell us what their injuries are, their prognosis, and their future care. But guess what? The insurance company on the other side has to do the same thing to defend the claim. So adjusters, when they hear this, their ears perk up, and they're like, well, I don't want to overspend on my policy. So maybe it's, again, back to that saying, it's not worth the squeeze, and I'll just give you the money and go away. Many times, though, unfortunately, not experienced or well-versed attorneys trip up and will demand a number, and then ultimately they come to find out that they could have gotten more. It's that game of almost that you see with Howie on TV all the time, a deal or no deal, where you pick it and you don't know what's behind that next door, but you have to strategize. You have to be mindful of that. And you have to communicate that with the client, because the client needs to trust you in that process. They're not involved in that. So they're basically handing you the keys and saying, go out into the world, go do what you do best, and make sure that I maximize my recovery.
I find, like with a lot of insurance companies, not all of them, but for example, like State Farm, they don't like to give us the policy limits of their insured. So we don't know what we're getting, but sometimes they'll hint. Or you say, I got some really big injuries. I believe the policy is $100,000, for example. Can you confirm that? Well, no, I can't confirm it. Okay, but is it close to there? Would you tell me if it's more or less? We play these games a little bit because they're not allowed to say it, but they'll hint to where they're at because they're trying to get this case resolved like we are, right?
Right. And I've seen that too, where it's like with a wink and a nod, higher, lower, is it a minimum policy? It's not a minimum policy. Well, is it 100? No. So right there, you pretty much have closed the universe to either 25 or 50. And based on your injuries, you are better positioned. And they sometimes do it knowingly, but sometimes they don't. And that kind of lets you go back to the client and say, hey, this is what I think. This is what I believe based on the conversation. Now we can pivot and we can make sure that we don't incur additional costs to make sure you're maximizing it. Or we can become more aggressive because there is more money and more purse to go after.
Gotcha. So going back to the client again, so you have the offer amount. We have an idea of what the policy amount is from the person who hit you or caused the injury. And then, you know, at our firm, we kind of come up with a settlement value, which is a range of values based on a lot of variables. And some of the variables, we don't even know what they are right now. And we try to give the client what we feel based on our round table of attorneys, for example. We bounce it off each other. With all of our years of experience, what's the settlement value in that county, whether it's Bucks County, Philadelphia, Montgomery County, Lehigh Valley? We give the client, this is where we feel is settlement value. So that might be a range of like $25,000 or $50,000. How do you come up with settlement value? And I know that's a loaded question, but can you give us just a brief rundown of how you come up with settlement value when you're communicating an offer to your client?
You made a good point in a sense of the things, the variables we're looking at. You're looking at venue. So venue is where the crash took place or where the defendant lives, because that, if we get into litigation, can add $25,000, $50,000, or even $100,000. Philadelphia versus Bucks are very large differences. Philadelphia is historically known to have higher verdicts, and that has a lot to do with the demographics that is built up in Philadelphia. You have a large population of Hispanic, African-American, where Bucks County is predominantly, historically, more white Caucasian. So all these things are stuff that an experienced attorney knows, and ultimately you have to be able to communicate. So looking at the valuation, you're looking at prior cases, similar situated individuals with injuries, outstanding medical liens. You're putting all these together in almost an algorithm like the Matrix, where all the numbers run by your face, and you're giving your best guess based on those precedent that's been set. And that number is then your evaluation. An individual who has soft tissue injury, which means they don't have any fractures or herniations, is a very different evaluation than someone who broke six ribs and has a TBI. And just in the injuries themselves, you can kind of piece together. But that's also sometimes, even with our evaluations, it's about the available insurance. So I could say that the case is worth $100,000 plus, but if we only have $50,000 because the third party who hurt you only has 50 and you have underinsured motorists for 50, that's 100 right there. That's all we can get. So even though we have evaluations on that, those numbers are then again molded to ultimately, at the end of the day, what's available.
So when having these meetings with our clients, we're talking about, again, the offer, the settlement range, but we're also talking about the costs and expenses that client would have to pay out of that money. So we eventually get to a net figure to the client. You mentioned a few things at our firm. We try to investigate and determine all outstanding medical bills. We contact the medical providers. We ask them for their bills. We also ask the clients if they've received bills, because usually medical providers will send bills monthly to the client at their home, even though they know we're working on the case. And then we tally them together and we put them on what you call a schedule of distribution, right? That's kind of like an accounting of what came in and what went out, right? But you mentioned something called liens, and I'm not sure all of our viewers or listeners know what a lien is. Can you kind of briefly explain that?
Sure. So when you get involved in a motor vehicle crash, talking from motor vehicle side, or even a slip and fall, but more so motor vehicle, there's something called no-fault insurance. It's a name that goes around. There's an acronym called PIP. PIP is personal injury protection. It's basically, unless you choose to elect more, $5,000, $10,000, $25,000. Usually standard, it's $5,000. So once that is exhausted by ER, ambulance bill, then these medical providers start to bill your health insurance. So that might be Medicare, Medicaid, it might be Blue Cross, in all those other entities out there. And a lien is established. So what happens is these medical providers and your insurance have agreements. They say, hey, we can bill a procedure at X and you owe us X. And they say, okay, that's a good fair deal. But if there's a settlement or if there is an issue where there's added money, we can come back at a second time and we can ask for more. So ultimately, it's a fancy term called subrogation rights, which basically means in a nutshell that they can come back again and get paid again on these claims if there's more money or there's a settlement in place. So we're not only checking if they have the right to do this per the contract claims, and each insurance company that provides medical healthcare is different with their clients. There's millions of pages and they have all those fancy things, but we're also making sure that it's a fair amount. It's not an exorbitant amount, or it's not double billed, or all those things. So a lien is established, which is basically a placeholder that says, hey, if you get a settlement, you got to let us know, and we might have more bills for you to pay. But that's step one. And once we identify that they are valid, then we go, okay, you have a claim for it, but we want you to reduce this. And we fight tooth and nail to get that reduced, because even a little bit of $100 here and there adds up to the client, because that doesn't come to our fee. That doesn't come to our law firm. That goes directly in the pocket of the client that we just served and got that settlement for.
So certain types of health insurance providers, for example, HMOs in Pennsylvania, or self-funded ERISA plans, which is a real technical term, but there's certain type of healthcare plans, government plans like Medicare, Medicaid, those types of things, they basically have a right to be repaid for part of the medical bills that they've paid on the case, right?
Correct.
Is that essentially what a lien is?
Yes, exactly.
So we have to address those liens, because if we don't pay those entities back, they have a right to come after our clients personally. And technically, I think they have a right to come after us if they're not taken care of. So we look at that and we try to give the client you know, the best shake at what they could get in their pocket. And that's memorialized in a schedule of distribution, right?
Correct. And that, amongst other things, keeps us up at night, you and I collectively and all the attorneys here, those liens, because like you just mentioned, if they're not paid, they're knocking on two doors, the client and ours.
And going back to settlements in general, based on your experience, if we don't feel we're getting a fair offer, you decide to recommend to tell the client that, hey, we think we should put this case in litigation. That means you file a complaint, and now we're going through the court procedures and court rules all the way to trial. What's been your experience, and how much money, or how the offer gets, or does the offer increase or decrease when you take a case with your client into litigation?
And I will knock on wood before I say this. I've never had a case to date, unless the client admits that they were at fault or says something just off the wall that we don't advise them or during prep comes up, that an offer pre-suit has decreased once we filed suit. And that's for the reasons that we mentioned earlier. There's incurred costs for both sides. There's experts that need to be hired if it's a liability and or medical. So we are going over these numbers with the client because they're going to lowball you. These insurance companies aren't your best friend. They aren't called snake farm for a reason. And they're going to pay once it's before the court because there's that wild card factor. That wild card factor is a jury of 12 or 7 based on the number. And they don't want to be put in that uncomfortable position. Whereas versed litigators and trial attorneys thrive on that stuff. It's one of the biggest things. It's the adrenaline rush, but also the fact that your client can actually be heard. So going back to the question that you mentioned, basically, is if we think that they're being wronged, unless the client is jumping up and down and saying, hey, I want to settle this case. And another analogy I always give is we're basically the tour guide. We are familiar with these stops and how to incur additional monies being offered and up the ante. But the client is driving the bus. If the client wants to get off the bus anytime, they can. They can say, I want to sign. I want to be done. I'm over this case. I want to turn the chapter. And I wouldn't. But we wouldn't be doing our job ethically or just by means of just being a good person and an advocate if we didn't tell them, hey, if you file suit, the juice is worth the squeeze. We're going to put costs in this, but we're putting costs in this because they're going to pay dividends 2, 3, 4 times. And we might get that policy that they're offering half on, especially if you're continuing that treatment.
So I met with a gentleman yesterday and say his offer was $70,000 and there was a $100,000 policy. He still has injuries. He's still treating. And I was trying to convince with him to treat a little bit more and get more medical evidence because the medical treatment, the medical reports, that's what the insurance companies look at when valuing a case to determine if somebody's still injured or if they're still treating. So our job is to get as much as possible for our clients. And I was trying to convince him to continue to treat, but he wanted to hang it up. He's tired. He didn't want to wait any longer. And he didn't want to go to court to try to get another $10,000 or so. But in this case, for example, the offer was $70,000, but there was $30,000 more to get. In that situation, we know if we file a lawsuit, it's automatically going to cost money. Cost money to file a complaint, do discovery, hire experts, but there's $30,000 left in that situation. What are your thoughts on whether that case should be pushed to file a lawsuit, or should we just negotiate a little bit more and try to get like $80,000 or $90,000 and call it a day? What do you think in that situation? What are your thoughts?
If the client is adamant on not going to litigation, we're not going to make them be uncomfortable or push them into a corner where they have to oblige by what we say. So in that situation, I love the idea of going back to the adjuster and saying, hey, if we go into litigation, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you a blueprint. And it is imperative that you actually do these things when you file a complaint like we do here, because you have a rapport and you have a reputation. You're not the reputation that is the attorney who files suit and then folds over when another offer comes in. You do what you say. So I give the marching orders and I say, if we file suit, I'm going to have a neurosurgeon or a orthopedic opine on this. I know based on the prior narratives that we've seen come through and that we've litigated that it's going to be $12,500 for each injection, or it's going to be $85,000 for a fusion. All those things are stuff that I'm going to communicate with the adjuster. So when they see that complaint come through and it gets filed, they're saying, oh crap, he's doing what he just told me he's going to do. And now I just need to pony up the money. In a situation in that where the client is still going back and forth, I kind of give them the analogy that this is what the insurance company wants you to do. They want you to tap out. And it's almost that rally cry that again, for a lay person who's an injured person who just wants to hang it up and get done and over with, you feel for them and you understand why they want to do that. But you're their advocate. You're their knight in shining armor. So you have to kind of rally behind them and say, listen, trust me. You've trusted me to this point. You signed with this firm because you trust me. You signed with this firm because you knew that we would maximize that. Let me do what I promised to do for you. And many times the clients feel that when you're in the room with them or talking with them on Zoom and they see your emotion, they see your passion, they'll say, hey, let's file suit and let's ride this baby out, because they believe you and they trust you and you haven't steered them wrong to date. So being an advocate and just reinforcing that, hey, I'm here for you and we're going to get this done. I just need a little bit more trust.
Yeah, sometimes we're called attorneys and counselors at law. Sometimes we're just counselors or more like a coach.
Okay.
Hey, follow through. You've been this far. Let's just push it a little bit farther. Do a couple more months of treatment. We'll get the records. We'll get that number up. But then there's other times where the insurance companies will say tap out at, say, 92,000 out of 100. Not offering you a dollar more. I don't care if you litigate or not. At that point, the cost of litigation now come into play in your decision on whether you're going to recommend filing a lawsuit or not. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Absolutely. So what I tell most people is $100,000 at trial is not the same as $100,000 pretrial. And what I mean by that is these reports and these experts, they don't do stuff for free. So they need to, many times, for just judicial efficiency, will depose the experts on video outside of court, and then we play it in court. Those are $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. So in that SO, the scheduled distribution meeting that we just talked about a little bit ago, or in those meetings that we're talking to the client, we're going over those numbers too, because those are added costs for a trial. You need demonstrative illustrations. You're not just going to go in half and half it. You're going to go in and you're going to put your best foot forward. Because at the end of the day, unfortunately, the reality of it is if you, on a $100,000 policy, get $250,000, there's other things that you have to do to get that extra $150,000. But many times the result of that is you just get the $100,000 and that's the end of the game. So if you're doing it for the right reasons and you're not doing it to kind of have your ego scratched, you're going to advise them, hey, 92.5 out of 100. Yeah, we didn't get the policy, but there's a reason why here. There's a reason why, because the cost that we put in is just going to reduce that net number to you. And clients respect that. They're like, all right. And many clients don't want to go to court anyway. They don't want to deal with putting the fate into the hands of jurors. And just because you go to court doesn't mean that the jurors are going to agree to you and give you that number. So you're also subject to that too. So these paths kind of come together and then they break off into three different routes.
So it's kind of like a business decision, right? It's going to cost this much to litigate the case. For example, filing a complaint in Philadelphia is like $700. Then you have to serve the complaint. Then there's discovery costs, there's deposition costs, court reporters costs. So many times we find, even in a normal case that's not a crazy or a traumatic injury that's really bad, cases to go to trial sometimes could be $25,000. So we have to make a business decision. Is it worth filing the lawsuit and going through the cost? There's also other considerations like time, right? How long does it take usually once you file a case to get to a trial in our area? How long does that usually take?
Depending on the venue, it could be 2 years plus.
So 2 years. The client has to treat. The client has to go to more medical appointments because you can't just stop treating 2 years before trial, right?
It's an absolute commitment. And one of the big things that I tell clients too is put yourself in the shoes of a juror. If you're asking them to give money to you, there's, and the English major in me loves this, if you're not treating, people corroborate pain with treatment. That's the unfortunate reality. But there's also the flip side of that. If you break a rib, there's not much you can do in regards to rehab. You kind of just have to let that bone repair in itself. For a TBI, you're going to hit your maximum improvement at a certain point in time, and there's still going to be permanent damage. That could be ringing of the ears. It could be sensitivity to light or sound. Sometimes treatment isn't there, but you have to follow up and just corroborate that with medical experts and say, hey, I'm still status quo. I'm still not doing good. I'm still not good. And many clients don't want to do that because, like you said, they're tired. They want to tap out and they don't see the long game to it. And that's where we kind of come in and, like you said, counsel them and advocate and say, well, there's a reason why, because the jurors want to see those medical records. They want to see the corroboration of it. They don't want to just hear about the pain. They want the detail, the throbbing, the severity of it, the constant, the duration, all those things that a medical record, when you go to a doctor, if they're asking the right questions, is going to document.
So just so our viewers know, in Pennsylvania, we have a 2-year statute of limitations, and that basically means we have 2 years before we have to bring a lawsuit or our claim's forever gone, right?
Correct.
And during that time, obviously our clients are treating, they're They're going to the doctors, they're getting therapy, they're getting pain management, whatever they need. So they have up to 2 years to get to a point where we know where they're going to be. We call that like maximum medical improvement. But sometimes we don't find deficits like future wage loss or future medications they need, or they might need a surgery because their condition's getting worse even after 2 years. So many times our clients are frustrated when we get to the 2 year mark, but we still haven't reached maximum medical improvement depending on the situation. So how often do you see that in your practice?
It happens often, especially because of the cases that we handle on a regular basis are catastrophic cases. These aren't many times soft tissue, or they start as what the client thinks is soft tissue, and then they're guided towards that proper diagnostic treatment, and they learn that there are herniations or there is a tear or a partial tear, and then they're able to get that. So it's important, though. But what we try to do here, and we're really good at doing it, is we try to not wait 2 years or the 13th hour where we're filing the complaint. We try to push out that demand in an appropriate time that represents where the client is, the treatment, and what the futures may be at that 12, at that 13 month mark. So you're not waiting 2 years and then 2 years again. We try to cut that time in half. And during that time, we're learning what the policy is, and we're having a better idea about it, but we're also learning what the future holds for this person.
So one of the things we're focused on, and it's better for the clients, we feel, is speeding up the time of the case, right? If it's a pre-litigation, if the case is in pre-litigation, we're trying to speed that up. If the case is either going to settle or not going to settle, right? We have certain policy limits we discussed about, mostly in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, and either the case is going to settle or it's not. If not, we're trying to get that into a lawsuit, because we found, at least with our cases, that we're getting 30 to 40% more once we litigate the case. Have you seen that?
That's absolutely correct. And to piggyback that a little bit, just because we're speeding up the case, there's nothing about the integrity of that case that's being sacrificed. If anything, you're getting to know your maximum medical improvement sooner rather than later, because you're going in front of the doctors that are specialized in this and that can help you and advise you. And that's a good thing. Like when you come to Cordisco and Sale, and generally speaking, you're getting not just a lawyer who cares, but you're getting a whole team of network of doctors. It's not some Joe Schmo who's in the bottom of basement doing acupuncture. These are double board certified neurosurgeons. They're orthopedics. They're trailblazers in their field. And many of these individuals, the attorneys actually treated with before. And we're putting our name on it as a reputation because they're good at what they do. They have operation privileges at multiple hospitals because they're good at what they do. So that being said, you're one of the most important things that we always advocate here is that if you're seriously hurt and you want to treat, the medical treatment that you get is going to help you get better. And there's clients who take two thoughts to that. Some are like, all right, I'll just deal with the pain. And there's some who jump into that full-heartedly and say, I want to go to the doctors because I want to get better. When you have that second client, the lawsuit and the personal injury case takes care of itself because they're going and they're advocating for themselves. Because many times, these individuals have never been hurt before. They don't know a neurosurgeon from a pain management doctor or a chiropractic or all these names that are being thrown in their face. And we're kind of here to lessen that load and help them melt the stress away. But many times in my cases, if my client is going to the proper treatment and they're advocating for their own care, the rest of it takes for itself, because I can step into the spotlight and say, look at what Jane or John Doe's doing. Look how badly they're hurt. Look at every one of these records. Look at the impact witnesses, their family, their friends that are saying they're hurt bad.
So it sounds like you're telling us if the client follows the doctor's instructions, they follow our instructions, they go to all their appointments, they do what they're supposed to do, they can really help the value of their case.
Absolutely.
So far we've been talking about, you know, the most common case, car accident. We see that maybe 90% of our practice is car accidents. But the 10% or other cases are catastrophically injured cases where someone is very badly injured and they're injured by a corporation, somebody that has a very large insurance policy, maybe multi-million dollars. We take a different approach with those cases and we try to file suit very early because we know those cases aren't going to settle very easily. Can you tell us why they don't settle easily?
Because there's a lot of money and there's a lot of good attorneys on both sides. So on the outset, when somebody is severely hurt, they're not going to get better overnight. They're not going to get better in 2 years. And with house explosions where surgeries involve broken bones, TBIs, all these things aren't going to resolve themselves. And we know that. And there's a large impact to that. This is Could it consist of a healthcare plan, a wage loss, vocationalist? All these individuals put together isn't something that's going to happen or properly situated pre-suit, because A, the available policies, like you just mentioned, millions and millions, but these injuries aren't going to go away. These are injuries forever, forever. And a lot of our clients have forever injuries, but not to the extent where they need an in-house nurse or they no longer can work, so they're collecting Social Security disability. All these different factors that we know through our experience and through those estimates and numbers and venues and defendants, we know that the best value is served and the best approach for our client is only absolute 100% of the time, only appropriately done when you file a complaint. And there's also many things too. These defendants are a little bit cheeky sometimes. And when I say cheeky, what I mean is that there's businesses within businesses. So there's umbrella companies and there's LLC here or there. So as attorneys, we want to make sure that we have everybody at the table that needs to answer to the negligence that was completed. So that sometimes takes time. And many times they'll be hiding within a name of a name or a document that's not produced. Defendants don't need to produce squat pre-suit. When you get into litigation, they have what we call discovery requests. And we get that information of who the owners are, who the big players are, who's the corporate designee of operations and safety. All these people, they have to oblige by. So we make sure that we're dotting our I's and crossing our T's and making sure we have all those people so we can ultimately prove our case.
So some of these companies that we're going against are multinational companies. For example, we have cases against Amazon. They don't even expose or tell us what their insurance policy is because it's almost unlimited. So, you know, what John Cordisco has always told us is that the only reason an insurance company will pay you money is because they're afraid you're going to take them to court and get more. So that's the kind of theory we take in these big cases, is that we have to fight these cases, expose all their wrongdoings, put our best foot forward, show a full team effort, have our experts lined up, and really take it to the steps of trial, if not to trial, to the first day of trial, second day of trial. Whatever it is, we're going to show them that we're going to take them to the limits. And that's when we find we get our best offers, right?
Correct. And absolutely. So you want to take it to, I think you and John say collectively, to the steps of the courthouse is where you're going to get your best offer. Or even maybe sometimes even after opening statements. They don't want that wild card, like we mentioned earlier, of those jurors, because you never know what they're going to do on that any given day. Any given Sunday, it's any given court day. You don't know what a juror is going to come back with.
And they could be hit with multi-million dollar verdicts. And we're there. And if there's really unlimited insurance or unlimited assets to go after, they're exposed to that. And that's their fear. So insurance companies at the end want to settle those cases because they're afraid, depending on the venue, like Philadelphia.
So
they're afraid of what could happen if that actually goes to a jury.
Yeah. And it's who blinks first. And I can tell you, we don't blink. It's more so the insurance company because they're afraid of the what if.
Okay. So wrapping up our conversation today, talking about settlements, one thing I always say to the client is, I want to make you aware of everything, the pros, the cons, the cost, the settlement value, the settlement range, the cost of going forward, the percentage of likeliness that we're going to succeed at trial, because I want you to look back 5 years from now and say, we made the right decision. Based on all the information we know right now, we made the right decision. So oftentimes I'll tell my clients, go home, sleep on it, talk to your wife, talk to your family about it. Call me next week. Let me know what you think, because we only get one shot at this to make it right. Is that how you operate?
It's verbatim. The same damn thing. Listen, this is your case. And like I said, at the end of the day, most important thing is you only get one bite of the apple. So we're going to make sure that this one bite of the apple is a damn wicked one.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks again for tuning in to The Injury Pros. Remember, if you or someone you know needs help after an injury, don't hesitate to reach out. We're here to help. Lastly, remember to subscribe at injurypros.com, listen on your favorite podcast platform, or watch us on YouTube. Until next time, stay safe and know your rights.